Well, I thought I would read. I've been consecutively reading through first canto and second canto. Now I'm into the third canto and like to just continue. Get on board. The train is stopping. All aboard. Going into third canto, chapter 5. And I'm going to read one text, but before I do that, I'll just do a little warm-up, or like the setting. You spoiled it. It was cooperating, and now you've...
That's fine. That's fine.
The third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam begins with a very nice place. The Srimad Bhagavatam is not chronological. It's not that everything that's narrated follows in chronological sequence. So we'll go back to first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and one of those chapters, chapter 13, is called Dhritarashtra Quits Home. Those of you that read first canto know that one. That's a wonderful chapter. But at the very beginning of the chapter, there's mention that Vidura, being insulted by Duryodhana, left the royal palace and went on pilgrimage for a long time. In the course of that journey, he met Maitreya Muni, became fully satisfied and perfected in self-realization through his exchanges with Maitreya Muni. And then he decided to return back to Hastinapur to deliver his brother to Dhritarashtra. There's two or three verses, the beginning of the 13th chapter, Canto 1. Beginning of chapter, or Canto 3, is the sages, having heard this way back in the first canto, they say, you know, Vidura is such an elevated devotee, and Maitreya, elevated devotee. The talks between those two must have been really special. Can you tell us what those talks were? What were the subjects that they discussed? And you said that Vidura went on pilgrimage. Could you tell us where he went on pilgrimage and what his experiences were while he was on pilgrimage? Can you tell us that, please? Those little cluster of questions and then the meeting of Vidura and Maitreya make up about 3.5 cantos, because it goes in detail and in detail and detail. You can't hear? I can put the microphone closer. He's going to like hold the harness and make sure it doesn't go swinging and bash me in the face. But is that better? Thank you. high technology tonight.
East meets West.
So, the sages ask these questions, and Sutta Goswami responds, and it's actually, he's responding about what he heard from the discussion between Maharaj Parikshit and Shukadeva Goswami. So, the discussion goes into Vidura's pilgrimage, and it exhaustively describes the places where Vidura went on pilgrimage. And one of those places, towards the end of this long list of where he went in pilgrimage, was Prabhasa. And for those of you that are Krishna book buffs, what is the significance of Prabhasa? It's a place of pilgrimage. But what's the special significance of it? It's very near Dwarka. And it's the place where, one of the things that happened there is where the Yadu dynasty had they destroyed themselves. So he went there after the Yadu dynasty had destroyed themselves. So he knew what happened. These are his relatives. They're all gone. The entire dynasty. And that was a big dynasty. Forget the number of zeros behind the one, but a lot of zeros. Because Krishna had 16,108 queens. Each of those queens had 10 sons, and each of those sons had 10 sons. You do the math, and it's a lot of zeros. And that entire dynasty was gone. And he knew it. He continued on his pilgrimage, and by the arrangement of Providence, as he was traveling through a forest in Vrindavan, now there's in the third canto, earlier chapters, several places it mentions the river Jamuna, one place it mentions by the river Ganga. Maybe it was different pastimes of Krishna, different appearances of Krishna. But we're going to describe it as, so when you read the canto and you say, oh, Maharaj said it with the Jamuna. Because that's in the Jamuna. In Vrindavan. He was in a forest. And in the forest, he found Uddhava. And the chronology is, it was right after Uddhava heard Uddhava Gita, which doesn't take place until the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, but it's mentioned in the 3rd canto of the Bhagavatam. So while it's not chronological, it's very logical. Because we're getting a prelude to what's coming later. That's the logic of it. We're getting a synopsis, and then the expanded form later. So when he sees Vidura, when Vidura sees Uddhava, same thing happens that should happen when we think of Uddhava. When you think of Uddhava, what do you think of? Krishna! The most intimate, dear friend of Krishna. Outside of Vrindavan, Uddhava was the most elevated and intimate associate of Krishna of all. We say that Arjuna was the dearmost friend of Krishna. And for that reason, Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to him. But Krishna spoke Uddhava Gita and spoke even more confidential things to Uddhava. You want to leave the 11th canto now, don't you? Please do. But a synopsis of it comes. Vidura immediately starts asking about Krishna. How is Krishna and Balaram? Because you're the dearmost associate. And all the residents of Dwarka, with whom you've been the chief leading personality. How is Ugrasena? How is the wives, Satyabhama and Rukmini, and all the Jambavati, and all of the wonderful wives of Krishna? And he lists the associates of Krishna again, and he knows that they've all gone. He doesn't want to say it. Just like Vidura, when he was asked by Dhritarashtra, asked by Yudhisthira about the welfare of his relatives, he didn't even answer the question because he didn't want to disturb the mind of the Pandavas. After asking, there's a whole set of how is everybody? Uddhava completely loses control. By hearing Krishna's name, what to speak of the feelings of separation intensifying his thought upon Krishna, he goes into trance. In the purport, Prabhupada said he went to Krishna in Krishna Loka. He was with Krishna in Krishna Loka. Tears were streaming from his eyes. His whole body was trembling. He was exhibiting symptoms of ecstasy and love of God, just hearing about Krishna, hearing Krishna's name. He was on such a platform. Imagine somebody said, Dr. Drew, I heard you read some verses in the Bhagavad Gita. How was it? Did you like those verses? And he went into a state of trance. Tears streaming from your eyes. It's like that. Uddhava's like that. He's on that platform. And he wanted, but he's a Vaishnava, so he wanted to serve. Here's Vidura in the middle of the forest, and he's just come to, by Krishna's arrangement, providential arrangement, there he is. I want to serve him. So he tried to come out of this state of ecstasy so he could serve Uddhava or Vidura. And it's very much resembles, from his position, Shukadeva Goswami's answering to Maharaj Pariksit's questions. He answers in the form of prayers. He doesn't directly say, Uddhavaji or Viduraji, this is how everybody is. He starts speaking about Krishna. He speaks for 2.5 chapters, just like, press the Uddhava button and ask about Krishna. And he can't stop talking about Krishna. The first, it's in three sections. The first section is his intense feelings of separation. Because Krishna's just left. Just left. Like asking somebody who their dear most friend has just left. And how's your dear most friend? And they just left their body. They left the world. So that's his condition. So he's speaking about our great misfortune. Krishna has left. And he describes the glories of Krishna that we no longer have, and the glories of Krishna, the glories of Krishna, the glories of Krishna. And then he starts speaking about how it gives him so much pain. These glorious things that Krishna has done give him so much pain. And the pain is not our kind of pain. His pain is that worldly people will not understand Krishna. That pains him very much. And he gives all kinds of examples of, what's the word? Seeming contradictions in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's language. He calls it Abhrama Vilas. Vilas indicates pastimes, and Abhrama, those that bewildering contradictions of his pastimes. He who is not born takes birth. He who is feared by feared personified becomes afraid of Kamsa and requests his father to take him to Gokul. He stays in Gokul for so many years because of fear of Kamsa. He who destroys these demons, when he comes in the presence of Vasudeva and Devaki, he pleads with them for forgiveness, for being away from them for so long, because I was afraid of Kamsa. These activities of the Lord give me great pain. Now, for the devotees, they're ecstatic. But for him, it's pain because people don't understand Krishna. They consider him ordinary. And therefore, they offend Krishna. That gives him, that persons offend Krishna because of their ignorance. It gives him great pain because he sees Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And ordinary people don't see that. And they suffer so much and they make offenses and it pains him too much. What he's getting to is this dichotomy or the apparent contradiction of his disappearance. And in this section, very valuable instruction, very detailed. Hare Krishna. Very detailed and confidential instruction about the disappearance of Krishna. We have our nice verse from Bhagavad Gita, Janma Karma Chame Divyam. Can you recite it? You know the meaning? Okay. Janma Karma Chame Divyam. Divyam means? Divine, transcendental. Janma, birth. Karma, activity. Janma karma chame divyam. If one can understand the transcendental nature of Krishna's janma and his pastimes, his lila or his activity, chaktvadeham purnar janma. When giving up this body, one doesn't take birth again. So here in the third canto, we're getting an Uddhava version of the Lord's pastime of leaving this world. It's very deep and profound and elevated. Very nice. He goes into the detail of how that Krishna arranged for his own disappearance. Krishna arranged for Samba. He details it. Krishna arranged for Samba to go before brahmanas who were gathered at a holy place and make fun of them. Krishna arranged for his own departure. Samba went dressed as Samba is one of Krishna's sons. So Samba dressed himself up as a woman, put a iron club underneath his sari, covered his head, looked the other way shyly, and the other boys said, "This woman would like to know the nature of the child that will be born of her. Will it be a boy or a girl? Your great sages, surely you can tell." The great sages knew exactly what was going on. They were making fun of the brahmanas. And so they uttered a curse. That iron club that's under the cloth of this young boy will be the death of the entire Yadu dynasty, for you've offended the brahmanas. Krishna induced all of that to happen, because why would the brahmanas curse their little boys? Why would the boys do those things? They're sons of Krishna. So message went to Ugrasena. "Oh no, we just made a terrible offense. We defended the brahmanas in his clubs. The destruction of the entire Yadu dynasty. What to do, what to do?" It's too late. We can't take it back. It's done. Ugrasena consulted the Brahmanas, Royal Assembly, and the decision was made, take that iron club, grind it into little powder, and then throw the powder into the ocean. Everything except one piece, a core piece of the club, was ground. The powder went out to sea, washed onto the shore of Prabhas, in an area where reeds were growing, and they made the reeds like iron. And so when the members of the Yadu dynasty went for some festival, and in the course of the festival, they were drinking some rice wine and they were doing some sporting activity, and they took some of these reeds and were having some competition, striking with reeds, and some sharp words were spoken, and they destroyed each other. The detail is described why Krishna did that. There's many reasons given, but a point I want to focus on here is one part of that iron club wouldn't grind into powder. So that was thrown into the sea also. And that piece was swallowed by a fish. The fish was caught by a fisherman. The fish was sold to a hunter. When he opened up the fish and saw that piece of iron inside the fish, he thought, oh, good fortune, I'll use this to make the head of an arrow. And that head of the arrow was the arrow that shot Krishna's foot and, quote, killed Krishna. Krishna arranged the whole thing. And then so, this Abhrama Vilas, the seeming contradictions that Krishna creates through his pastimes, pained Uddhava so much that Krishna devised his own departure in this way. Who dies of a shot in their foot? Maybe you lose your foot. Maybe it hurts and you lose a foot. You have to have your foot amputated, but you don't die. But Krishna arranged that he would leave this world that way, and he left this world leaving behind a body. The detail is described referring back to earlier in the second canto, first chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, where it's the universal form. There's a very detailed discussion about the universal form, which is a very difficult subject matter to understand. At least I find it to be very difficult. But it's, just go there a little bit, because it relates to the verse that I wanted to read. Just, this is all background to get you caught up to speed. The universal form is as difficult to understand as how something material, like creation, can come from one who is all spiritual. So God is all spiritual. God's not material, part spiritual and part material. God is all spiritual. No doubt about it. And from he who is all spiritual comes this place, which is not spiritual. It's material. It's prakriti. It's inferior prakriti. Upper prakriti. From he who is all spiritual. So how does that happen? That's a theological puzzle, a very enigmatic issue that so many theologies are made up of, describing what that is, how that happens. Then you take that God is a person. We had this discussion the other day, I forget where I was, maybe it was here. Why do people have an issue about God being a person? Was it here? Hare Krishna? Somewhere else. Why do we have an issue about it? You know, people say, you know, they pray to God. But when you show them a picture of Krishna, they go, oh, he can't look like that. Why he can't look like that? He's a person. He can do whatever he likes, first of all. He's all powerful. You say, you try to take the position, he can't, fill in the blank, then you're limiting God. Then he's not God anymore. But you can't do that because he's unlimited. So he can do anything. You can't say he can't. He can. Otherwise, he's not God. And that person who you're praying to, all religions have prayer, who is it that you're praying to? There's a person on the other end. Here's your prayer, right? And they're responding to your prayer. There's a person. So person means he has personality. He has form. He has quality. He has a name. He has activities. He's a person. No, he can't do that. Well, it's the same problem. You say he can't, then he's not God. We can. So now, let's do this one. God that has a form of the universe. Oh, he can't do that. Yes, he can. Well, this universe is temporary. That's right. And so it's like here and then it's not here. That's right. God can do that. Well, how can he do that? It's hard to understand. But that's what the universal form is. It's a manifestation, God's own, Krishna's own manifestation of the form of the universe. It's the universal form, Virat Rupa. And when Krishna appeared, this is, Uddhava discusses this. When Krishna appeared, he's Avatari, he's the source of all incarnations, and they all combined into this one original form of Krishna, because he's the original form, the source of all expansions, including the universal form, of which, this is the universe, and there's the universal form, from which Brahma, it's like the blueprint from which Brahma made the universe. Like, we're building the temple over and the temple property. But before there was the temple, there was a blueprint, right? Wasn't there a blueprint? An architectural design, then a blueprint, now the building. So now we're seeing the universe, but before there was the universe, there was the universal form, which Brahma received the impression of how to build the universe. Then he built the universe because he's the chief engineer. Took the plan. It's subtle, but he got that impression that from that he built the universe. That universal form appeared with Krishna, and when Krishna was leaving the world, he left the universal form. That was that body that Krishna left that got shot in the heel by this arrow that the arrowhead was for the iron club that Krishna arranged to be under the sari of Samba so that he could leave the world and leave behind his universal form and bewilder the minds of the materialists. That gives Uddhava great pain. It's beautiful. The composition of the Bhagavatam is beautiful. So after all of that, he said, you've asked me to speak about Krishna. So he hits the Krishna button again. So he goes through this little chronology of Krishna's birth. After describing the departure of Krishna, he describes the transcendental appearance of Krishna. And then little cameo shots of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan until he leaves Vrindavan and goes to Mathura. And he's in Mathura and he spends time doing different things like killing Kaliyavana through Mushikunda and running up the mountain with Balaram, with Jarasandha chasing behind him, and he jumps off the mountain and goes to Dwarka. Then he's in Dwarka and describes his pastimes in Dwarka. He has his whole meditation, just starting by, how is Krishna? This is Uddhava. And there's he concludes with the same place he begins, his great pain of separation from Krishna. Now this scene starts in the evening where Vidura finds Uddhava, and they speak all night long. They forget to sleep. They forget to do anything, but they're both so elevated, they're so absorbed in Krishna. And in the course of that dialogue, Uddhava discloses that just before, just now, Krishna left. He spoke at length on very confidential subjects, which he disclosed to me. He said why he did this. He wanted me to go to associate with the devotees of Naranarayan Rishi, because my Lord, he's Bhakta Vatsala, he's so kind upon his devotee that he appears just for the satisfaction of his devotee. And he gives different examples. Krishna went all the way to meet King Bahulashva. He went all the way to meet Mahavishnu. He gave his personal association. He went into the ocean to give his association to the Lord of the ocean. He wanted to also go to the devotees of Naranarayan Rishi, but it was time for him to go. So he wanted me to go in his stead. He gave me some service, and I must perform that service. He taught me very confidential things about himself. But while I was in that hearing, Maitreya was also there, and the Lord acknowledged, Maitreya, your life has now become perfect just by being here, because you're getting my association before my departure. And he heard everything that Krishna disclosed to me. This is Uddhava speaking. So I have to go now to Badrinath, because the Lord has given me that service. Otherwise I can't maintain my life. But Maitreya, he's elder to me, and he's fully realized in the same confidential subject matter. Go to him, and he'll teach you such confidential things about Krishna. I have to go now. And with much trouble, just to compose himself, he gets up and leaves. And Vidura begins sobbing, thinking of, because Uddhava disclosed, just before Krishna left, he mentioned that you would soon be coming, and he has great love for you. And Vidura's thinking, his mind is shattered, that before the Lord left, he thought of me. How fortunate I am. At the same time, how unfortunate I am. Krishna's just left. So he has these two exactly opposite, diametrically opposite, intense feelings. He falls to the ground weeping. He gathers himself and searches for Maitreya. And when he comes before Maitreya, Vidura's expert, he's described, he's glorified and appreciated by Shukadeva Goswami, that he's a perfectly realized soul. Before he left to go on pilgrimage, he was already considered such a wise person. Everyone had reverence for him. Well, except for Duryodhana. Everyone had reverence for him. They listened to his words. They respected him. Now he's not just a respected, learned person. He's a realized Uttama Bhagavat, topmost devotee. And he's going to hear from Maitreya. And Maitreya, although he's older than Vidura, I was having some conversation in the course of this visit about age and spiritual elevation. Age is not the consideration of... There's a cultural issue. Those that are elderly are always to be respected. And those that are most realized, they're to be most respected. Just like Prahlad, just a small boy. But the demigods were honoring him. Goddess of Fortune was honoring him. Because of his Krishna consciousness. So Uddhava was more elevated than Maitreya, But Uddhava was honoring Maitreya. So Vidura went to Maitreya. And instead of asking there's these intimate things that Uddhava said I should ask you about. He didn't do that. It's really beautiful. Expert. Let me read what he wrote, what he said. Yeah. Oh, great sage. Everyone in this world engages in fruitive activities to attain happiness. But one finds neither satisfaction nor the mitigation of distress. On the contrary, one is only aggravated by such activities. Please, therefore, give us directions on how one should live for real happiness. Expert. He's asking about Krishna indirectly. He knows all these things also. He wants to hear Maitreya's realizations. He wants Maitreya's heart. He wants that Sangha. He's not an uneducated person that doesn't know the difference between these things. But the solution to real happiness is a very confidential relationship with Krishna. So instead of asking, can you tell me confidential things about Krishna? He's asking this way. Got it? It's like very subtle and highly refined, cultured person. Then he praises the nature of saintly persons, like I was doing last night when Krishna was praising the trees. They're like great personalities, saintly personalities, just serving others. So Vidura speaks of Maitreya in that way. Your only existence, your only reason for being on earth is to do service unto others. So I'm here at your feet, eager to hear from you on these transcendental subjects. O great sage, kindly narrate how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is independent, the desireless Lord of the three worlds and the controller of all energies, accepts incarnations and creates the cosmic manifest. See, he doesn't have anything to do, but he creates this place and then he appears in this place. So he wants to hear about creation. So there's a lot in this canto about creation. Some people don't like that. It's too technical. Let's get on to the Leela part. There's nice stories. But it's very important for us to hear, for obvious reasons, because we're conditioned by this place. If we don't have a proper understanding of this place, how are we going to have a proper understanding of Krishna, who is beyond this place? So it's repeated again and again. It's one of the primary subjects, Srishti Stiti. There are Sarga and Visarga. The sub-creation and the creation. They're central topics of a Mahapurana or the Srimad Bhagavatam. I'm just about to get to the verse that we're supposed to read for tonight too. Anyway, it gives details of how he does creation in very poetic language. This is this evening's verse. You may narrate also about the auspicious characteristics of the Lord in his different incarnations for the welfare of the twice born, the cows, and the demigods. Our minds are never satisfied completely, although we continuously hear of his transcendental activities. So I'm just going to quickly cover what Prabhupada explains about these four things. The transcendental Lord, first, the previous is, it's another contradiction. He who is fully independent, he who has nothing to do, he has no obligation, he doesn't have to go to the office and do something. There's no reason for him to do anything. He does out of his sweet will. He creates this place. And then he appears within this place within different incarnations. What are the characteristics of those incarnations? And the reasons that he appears is for the demigods, the cows and the twice born. So it starts with the twice born. First birth, mother, father. Twice born through the spiritual master and the mother Vedas. And for persons who are like animals, that they're once born, then they don't need any of this. If this is for his appearance is for those who are seeing the progressive value of life and are taking the necessary steps with their life to receive that real value of the human form of life. Thus they become twice born. So Krishna's appearance is for them. His teachings are for them. His activities are for them. His mercy is for everyone, but especially for them, because they can receive it properly. And the cow. Krishna loves cows. Gopal. Govinda. Krishna is the protector of cows. He gives great pleasure to the cows. He loves cows. But there's a reason. And Prabhupada is explaining. The cow is the most important animal for developing the human body to perfection. This body can be maintained by any kind of foodstuff, but cow's milk is particularly essential for developing finer tissues of the human brain so that one can understand the intricacies of transcendental knowledge. Of course, he goes also to the bulls. The cows are producing the milk for finer brain tissue. The bulls are assisting in producing grain for our sustenance. So, for the protection of the cows, Krishna comes. And the demigods. He speaks of the administrative demigods, but he also speaks of those who are dedicated to service to the Supreme, distinguishing the suras and the asuras. So the demigods he includes, those who are administrating the affairs of the universe, but those that are also engaged in devotional service to the Lord. They're using this human form of life for self-realization, for that purpose. Krishna comes for the benefit of those individuals. So the Lord's pastimes for the protection of the twice-born civilized men, the cows and the demigods, are all transcendental. A human being is inclined to hear good narrations and stories, and therefore there are so many books, magazines, and newspapers in the market to satisfy the interests of the developed soul. But the pleasure in such literature, after it is once read, becomes stale, and people do not take any interest in reading such literature repeatedly. In fact, newspapers are read for less than an hour and then thrown in the dustbin as rubbish. The case is similar with all other mundane literature. But the beauty of transcendental literatures like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam is that they never become old. They have been read in the world by civilized man for the last 5,000 years, and they've never become old. They're ever fresh to the learned scholars and devotees, and even by daily repetition of the verses of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, there is no satiation for devotees like Vidura. He's amplifying this concluding statement of the verse that Vidura is saying to Maitreya, although I'm hearing again and again, I find no satiation. Prabhupada translates, one does not become completely satisfied. So we'll spend a little time with that and end. Completely satisfied is when the soul, it's like the example of the fish that's out of water and is put back in water. You can give amenities to a fish, but unless the fish is in water, he's not happy. Give him a television, nice chair, something. Not put him in water, he's happy. So it's the same. For us, the satisfaction is to be active in our relationship with Krishna in a spiritual atmosphere or a spiritualized atmosphere. Then we're happy. So that's the platform of satisfaction. However, the satisfaction that one experiences is there's still an appetite for more. Or there's never a point where you say, I've had enough Krishna Katha, thank you. No more kirtan, please. It's always wanting more. There's a very nice, often referred to, at least in our japa retreats, morning walk conversation with Srila Prabhupada in Nairobi, where some devotees are asking Prabhupada, how do we know if we're chanting properly? And Prabhupada's answer, his reply was, you must. And then Brahmananda said, no, what Prabhupada is asking is, we know we must chant, but how do we know when our chanting is quality? And Prabhupada again said the same thing, you must. There's no question, you must. So he asked it again. So we know we must chant, but what's the difference between quality chanting and poor quality chanting? And then there's a long response that Prabhupada gave. When there's quality chanting, there's no question of 16 rounds. It's 16 million rounds. One never becomes satiated with chanting. Okay, now I've completed my 16 rounds. One wants to chant and chant and chant, just like Rupa Goswami's very beautiful verse, the introduction to Vidagdha Madhava. I do not know how much nectar these two syllables Krishna have. When the tongue chants these syllables, one wishes to have millions of tongues. And when the ear hears those syllables, one wishes to have millions of ears. It's like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's description of the stage of Bhava Bhakti. And when that sound vibration enters into the chamber of the heart, it dances within the heart, giving great joy to the soul. So, back to Prabhupada in Nairobi. You're not on that platform, and therefore it's 16 rounds, you must. There's no question of quality. When there's quality, it's 16 million rounds. That's quality. Now it's regulative, you must. So Vidura, in association with Maitreya, he's heard all these subject matters. He's vastly learned, as Maitreya is vastly learned. So it's not a matter of, oh, tell me something I didn't know already. We find this example in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where as a daily practice in Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would go from his residence in Gambira to the Jagannath temple, take darshan of Jagannath and chant and dance in ecstasy, receive Mahaprasad from the Pujaris, go visit Haridas Thakur, give the Mahaprasad of Lord Jagannath to Haridas Thakur and take his association. Then he would go to the Gopinath temple, Tota Gopinath, and take darshan of Tota Gopinath and sit and hear Srimad Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit. Imagine hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit, who is none other than Radharani. I mean, who can imagine? And he would hear for hours. And specifically, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, he would hear the pastimes of Dhruva Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj from beginning to end. And when Gadadhar Pandit completed the pastime, Lord Chaitanya would say, say it again! Say it again! And in this way, he would hear the pastime hundreds of times, again and again, never growing tired of those pastimes. Say it again! Say it again. It's like a kirtan. Oh, some other mantra, please. No. Say it again. Say it again. That's the platform of Vidura. And that's the platform that by regulative practice, by our 16 rounds and regularly hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, we can come to such a platform of devotional service where it's speak it again. Not, oh, can you say something new? Something different? I heard that one before. Can you tell me another one?
Do you know another song?
Do you know another song? Variety of melodies in kirtan is certainly very nice. In amongst the six Goswamis, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami had heard from Gadadhar Pandit Srimad Bhagavatam under Lord Chaitanya's direction, and when he went to live in Vrindavan, he would not only recite Srimad Bhagavatam, he would sing Srimad Bhagavatam in three different melodies. Every verse he would just relish each verse, singing so sweetly. Maybe you've seen that picture I have in my office in New York where Gopal Bhatt is sitting there like this, and he's singing the Bhagavatam, and there's some two cuckoo birds on a branch of a tree listening to the sweet singing of Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. Meaning the sound of the cuckoo is very famous for being very sweet, but the cuckoo birds want to hear from Raghunath Bhatta Goswami his sweet singing of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this chapter 5 is a series of questions that are being asked by Vidura to Maitreya, and the answer constitutes a couple of cantos. So it's important, it's an important chapter where just essences are presented in a question form, and then later on the response is going to come. Characteristics of the forms of the Lord as they appear in this world and those persons to whom the Lord wants to benefit. Hare Krishna. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Any comments or questions? Anyone?
Number
7. 3, 5,
I think it's 7. 7. You said that Krishna is very inclined towards the cow. The cows in the material world also?
Sure.
And you said that cow milk nourishes the brain so that we can understand spiritual matters.
Well, let me read it again. The cow is the most important animal for developing the human body to perfection. The body can be maintained by any kind of foodstuff, but cow's milk is particularly essential for developing the finer tissues of the human brain so that one can understand the intricacies of transcendental knowledge. More. A civilized man is expected to live on foodstuffs comprising fruit, vegetables, grain, salt, sugar, and milk. Yeah, that's the reference. So now? That's okay? Okay. Anything else?
Actually, this might be a little humorous, but when I was growing up in Bombay, there was always a shortage of cow's milk,
yeah,
and we upgraded with buffalo milk. Just wondering what kind of effect that had on
I'll allow you to interpolate. Compare the cow and the buffalo and you can do the math. Doesn't do the same that the cow's milk does. Does something else.
Oh, it does do something.
Yeah. Makes people a little dull. Yes, that's just Bombay. It doesn't do the same thing the cow's milk does. Anything else? Yes?
Association of the devotees is the really important key factor for making advancement.
Association of devotees is the key factor for making advancement.
So, at our stage, we hear how the elevated personality associate with each other.
We hear from the scriptures how elevated personalities associate with each other.
So I want to know that how at our stage...
At our stage, what to do? We're not so elevated. We follow the example. We learn from, not imitate, but follow the example. But we can only behave according to our capacity. There's this saying, a bird can only fly as high as his wings can carry him. And that reference is made in terms of speaking on transcendental subject matter. One can only speak according to one's capacity or one's realization. So same with the gentle nature, the elegant nature of how elevated souls associate with one another. We can get a glimpse at their elevated state and get some hint of how we can mold our life in that way, but not imitate. But it gives us impetus, gives us inspiration, gives us some indicators of what is done, and we can look contrastingly what not to be done. In general, just like saying on a principle platform, there's enormous respect, genuine respect, and on our plane, something that I've come to understand anyway is that without respect, there's no question of a relationship. Say it the other way. The fabric of relationship is respect. So that's a good place to start on our platform, is respect. And it's not, you know, it's amani na manadena. It's not like, you know, I want you to respect me, Prabhu. It's offering respect. And regardless of whether the other person, whatever they're doing, offering respect or not, we offer respect. Lord Chaitanya's teaching for us, and certainly a principle to follow. Now, what basis do we respect? Here is a soul that's engaged in Krishna service. I respect that. And there may be this discrepancy or that shortcoming. That's okay. My respect isn't diminished because here's a soul that's engaged in at least striving to commit themselves nicely to Krishna's service. I offer my respect to that. Now I can address myself to whatever shortcoming and so forth and so on, appropriate to my position, their position, and so on. Not at any point pushing to the side the core of respect. And that's a nice beginning. Nice beginning. and add to that service. You could say that in relation to, I was sharing this with one devotee couple, you know, do you have any advice for us how as husband and wife we should live together peacefully? Respect and service. Any relationship. Respect and service. Not, you know, I'm the husband and you're the wife. You're supposed to serve me, right? You're the wife, I'm the husband. You're supposed to serve me. It was just true, but not like that. The husband is also supposed to serve the wife in a certain role or capacity, but it's service. And if that mood of service is slack or absent, it's horrible. It's not a relationship. It's something else. The mood of service, always, in all circumstances, the mood of service and respect. And then the rest is, you know, what's appropriate for the circumstance. Service. Mood of service. Then Krishna will start to decorate with nice ornaments the way in which we show respect for one another and serve one another. Anything else? Yes.
We are talking about service and respect. The similar thing comes to me in my mind. Nowadays, there is in the mundane world, recently there is a healthcare reform which passed, and similar bills passed. And the politicians, of course, say the Bill of Rights for the patients, but they do not talk about the responsibility of both parties, only rights. So everybody wants respect, but it's not one to do the business. So when you were talking about it, this thing came to my mind. It looks like it's this universal, unfortunately. People expect that without service, the counterpart.
Yeah. Well, from as a physician, you're applying that principle to medical profession. From a GBC perspective, we've been working on strategic planning, and one of them is to establish a constitution for ISKCON. That's a novel concept, isn't it? Having a constitution for ISKCON. And one of the items is this one. What are the rights and responsibilities of a member of ISKCON? You know, defining membership for ISKCON, try it sometime. Something that, you know, fits the whole of ISKCON. What does it mean to be a member of ISKCON? Anyway, and if you are, there are certain rights. There's also certain responsibilities. And, it, you know, then the leadership, certain duties, and certain responsibilities, but also certain rights. And, you know, putting those things down in codified terms, that's a challenge. So very, very deeply thinking persons have tried about four times, and it's really hard to get consensus on, you know, the right fit of language. But sure, with every situation, there's some rights, but there's also responsibilities on both sides. You know, the rights of the patient and their responsibilities, and the practicing physicians. What about our rights? along with our responsibilities. I've had some discussions with some of the physicians that have said, you know, this is, it's all on that side. It puts a big squeeze on the physicians. And they start to describe the different features of those rights and what our responsibilities are to fulfill those rights. Very difficult. And you know, they, as you, I'm sure you know, why? Is that, do you want to say something on that topic yourself?
When you were talking about it, this
that's what came to your mind.
How this is applicable universally, what you are saying.
Let's take, you know, our whatever unit, you know, our Bhakti Riksha group, to be a member of a Bhakti Riksha group, or to be a member of the temple, or to be whatever it is. There's some responsibility on our part to be part of that. There's also some privileges that go with it. But with privileges, there's responsibility. With facility comes responsibility. With the human form of life, there's facility. There's also responsibility. Okay. Anyone else out there? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, how to develop a taste for all things Krishna?
How to develop a taste for?
All things Krishna.
All things Krishna. Well, little at a time. I mean, one thing, like, because Krishna is raso vai saha, he is rasa. It's the natural, it's the taste of all tastes. But we're jaundiced. We're diseased, so we don't have a taste for that, which is very nice. Do we take our medicine a little at a time? And follow the diet prescribed by the physician. Take the medicine, follow the diet, become well. And the taste awakens because it's already there. It's natural. It's just covered by a diseased condition.
I just want to ask, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
We talked about respect and then service. So what's in your mind as the next step? Like, what is the next thing as a human being?
Just a maturing of those things. Like Shamsundar's question is, we have the example of very elevated Vaishnavas, what to do on our level. So what comes later is become elevated Vaishnavas and do it on a far more refined, cultured, and elevated level. So the foundation doesn't change, it's just the details of sweetness and the experience of Krishna's being pleased by those exchanges. Because Krishna is pleased by Vaishnavas serving one another in a very respectful, loving mood. We can access that happiness of Krishna. And that's very nice, Krishna's happiness, and experiencing Krishna's happiness by through the medium of service. Does that address your question, or did I misunderstand your question?
Yes, I think, yeah, to start. Can you have some example, like, what could be the next level, or what could be the elevated level of the time that you...
Well, here's an example that Srila Prabhupada gives. The difference between spontaneous and regulative. He gives the example of deity worship, where presently we have a regulative stage of deity worship. So you invite a deity and you begin some service and you do certain procedures and you try to do them nicely and you try to keep things very clean and do them punctually and do them every day, and you'll be very regulative about your practice. And as that matures, Your mind is thinking of different ways to serve the deity. Even when you're not serving the deity, you're thinking now of the Janmashtami dress or the flower ornaments that are going to be there, for how are you going to decorate the temple for the temple opening, or, you know, the mind just goes there thinking of those things and spontaneously wishing to do nicer and more elegant and beautiful, and become spontaneous. So the same in our dealings with Vaishnavas, the opportunity to associate with elevated Vaishnavas or serve another Vaishnava, or we think of ways to, and Krishna gives us intelligence, and it's part of the happiness of service, thinking how to serve others in varieties of ways. It becomes our life. It's life of varieties of service unto others, spontaneously, besides the regulative portion. Oh, I have to remember to not get angry and be disrespectful. You pass beyond that. A nice example that comes to mind right now is in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Das Kaviraj is describing what he went through before he began writing Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he was requested by various Vaishnavas in Vrindavan to do that. And he was feeling himself not qualified. But these Vaishnavas were so elevated. When they asked him, he felt compelled. It was like Krishna was asking him. And it describes one particular pujari, whose name I can't remember right now. But this particular pujari, his nature was, he would never hear anything ill spoken of another Vaishnava. People wouldn't dare do it in front of him because he just wouldn't hear it. It was his nature. He wouldn't hear anything criticism or negative about a devotee. Because of that, he brought the character of devotees up by that, his own Krishna consciousness. So like that. Respect beyond respect. It doesn't mean that we can't, you know, we can't see, you know, black and white. If there's some blemish, we can't see it. If there's a, you know, a big stain on your dhoti, you can't see it. You can see it, but get the idea. When we're dealing with one another, we're not yet in this perfected stage of Krishna consciousness like Vidura is and Maitreya is. This, like the question of Shyamasundara's, how do we behave now? We can look to the essence, and as we grow further in that essence, it displaces the shortcomings, the weaknesses. Krishna provides what we lack and carries what we have. Krishna takes care of the whole program. So as we become more elevated, we realize that. So rather than, you know, we can help to elevate another and serve another by being good examples. So, follow? A stage of respect and service unto others, a mood of service, is become advanced devotee. And that's the best service you can do, because through that medium you can elevate other devotees beyond whatever their shortcoming may be presently. Better than, excuse me, Prabhu, but, you know, we're serving together and I want you to know that you have a shortcoming over here. Because, you know, I know that you have it, and I want to make sure that you know that you have it too. You better work on that. I mean, I'm speaking with a tone because sometimes it comes out like that. But higher stages, be in an elevated state of consciousness oneself. This is something that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur taught. I'll just I'll end with this. While I was here, I mentioned that Bhurichand Prabhu, my godbrother, has had a very special role in my life from the first Krishna conscious literature that I received. I got it from his hand. It was a Back to Godhead magazine. And one of the feature articles in that magazine was an article by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I didn't even know what the magazine was. I didn't know what Hare Krishna was. I didn't, you know, I was just a college student kind of going on my life. So when I started to understand what it was, I became interested in reading the magazine. So the title of the article was Vedanta, its ontology, morphology, and somethingology. I can't remember what the other name was. I didn't even know what those words meant. So I had to get out my dictionary, look them up. And then I started reading the article. And I, you know, every fifth, tenth word I had to look up in the dictionary. And I was, you know, scholarly student. I knew how to read technical things. And it wasn't, its interest was not because it was technical. It's just the subject matter was so elevated. And 3 hours passed before I realized the time had passed. I was so absorbed. And at the end, I felt like I was floating, just spiritually elevated, just from reading Bhaktisiddhanta's writings. And I was, it helped me become a devotee. I was like, wow, what was that experience? So I had this, even before I became a devotee, I had this appreciation for Bhaktisiddhanta. So now fast forward, and I'm living in the Boston temple as a young bhakta. 2 weeks living in the temple, and Guru Das had just come back from India. He was with Prabhupada, and he had wonderful Prabhupada stories to tell, and it was like exhilarating. And he had a little pile of books. So I asked his permission, said, "Okay, look at your little pile of books." And right at the top was a book by Bhaktisiddhanta. So right away, you know, that's the one I wanted to look at first, Bhaktisiddhanta. Whoa. And just the, you know, here's the cover page. I don't even remember what the title was. I remember what the, just right on the inside, the foreword to the book. Bhaktisiddhanta wrote, "A Vaishnava never engages in fault finding, for by so doing, he is disclosing that his own heart has honeycombed with those very same faults. Rather, a Vaishnava is one who looks inward and sees where are there shortcomings and defects that I can improve upon. This is a Vaishnava." I'm sure I've got a few words a little bit different, but almost, I read that so many times. It like, it stayed with me. And so many problems that come up in devotee relationships is due to not understanding that point. A Vaishnava is one who looks within. If there's something out there, reflex, a knee-jerk reflex, you hit that little place in your knee and your leg goes up, right? That's a reflex. So something hits, and a Vaishnava is one who looks within and says, where is this within my heart? Because that's my assignment, is to make that place pure. And if I can make that place pure, then I can have some impact about stuff that's out there. But until this becomes pure, I haven't done my job. My job is over here, not over there. That's Vaishnava. Strong impact. So there's an example. Beyond simply respect and a mode of service, it's a more advanced stage of that. I can be of best service to others if my heart is pure. Or say the same thing in a different way. Here I am going along with life, and there's a situation that my life intersects with that is problematic. Something that I find is very helpful, it's another way of saying the same thing Bhaktisiddhanta said, is if Prabhupada was in this situation that I'm finding it, you know, very difficult, if Prabhupada was in this situation, what would happen? Would the situation improve, get worse, or stay the same? That's an easy one to answer. It won't improve. I'm here, it's not improving. What's the problem? It's over here, not over there. I'm not sufficiently pure. That's my project, is to become sufficiently pure, not to move that thing that's over there. I don't have the capacity to do it without purity. So let me become pure. That's Vaishnava. In the mood of service, with respect. Nice principles to live by. I mean, it's not too high, it's a principle. And our capacity may be not so great, but it's a wonderful principle to live by. Okay, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.